I've been told that this is one of the biggest problems with a person who is operating out of an office where the boss is perhaps miles away. Nobody to tell this individual when he should start to work or what he should do or who he should see. And you sort of, that was one difference. At the Citadel, your schedule was made out for you. Between 4 and 6, you will get out on the parade ground and engage in some method of sports. Or you will do extra drill during that period. Everything was mapped out. Georgia Tech, you were on your own. So that made it an interesting endeavor.
What was the chem engineering department like?
Well, the chem engineering department, in order to get accredited, had to construct an addition to the chemistry building for its laboratories, classrooms, and offices. And so this happened in, I think the accreditation came in 1938. So these were new facilities. They had a very good unit operations laboratory. The faculty was small. I believe there were only 4 faculty members. But the classes were small. Our senior class had about 60 people. We were always split into 2 sections. So there were never any classes in chemical engineering with more than about 30 people, which is something we'd like to be able to do today, but really can't. Also, I might go back that the classes at the Citadel, such as freshman math, freshman chemistry, sophomore physics, were small classes. I had to take an extra semester of physics at Georgia Tech, and that was my first time in one of the big amphitheater-type classrooms. So we may have had 100 people. Now we could put 300 to 500 in some of our classrooms here. And that's a big problem for the student as well as for the teacher. So the facilities at Tech were good. The relations with industry were good. The engineers, of course, seemed to be sought after. They had no PhD program, but they did have a master's program, and there were MS candidates serving as teaching assistants. So the quality of education I found at Georgia Tech was very good.
Was there any one aspect of chemical engineering that interested you during that time?
I would say the unit operations courses and the unit operations lab. One thing about the Tech curriculum at that time, between the junior and senior years, you were required to come back during the summer for 6 weeks to design, build, and operate a pilot plant facility. We built an aniline plant where we nitrated benzene and then hydrogenated to aniline. And we made aniline. We ran it around the clock on shift. And that was fun. That was fun. So I enjoyed the unit operations aspects, perhaps. Unfortunately, the curriculum at that time did not include an undergraduate thermal course. You obtained thermodynamics and physical chemistry, and that was it. And that was a shortcoming. And of course, at that time, there were no courses, no textbooks for reaction kinetics. So again, something you had to pick up on your own. As the discipline developed. So the tech experience was a good one, and of course, in the senior year, in December, there was Pearl Harbor, and that changed the complexion a great deal of the academic program, and in fact, it was speeded up. Graduation date was moved up about 3 weeks, so that the students could get on with the war effort in some way. And ours would have been the last large class in chemical engineering until after the war. That made a big difference, but the companies were flocking in to interview students about war effort directed work, and that was something that you needed to take time for, was to interview these companies. And I ran into one of my first problems, I would say, in professional ethics at that time. I'd really wanted to get an offer from Monsanto, and I'd talked with them and gone over to their plant at Anniston, Alabama.
Why Monsanto?
I got acquainted with Monsanto through the Monsanto magazine in the library at Georgia Tech. Going through those issues, it just looked like a good chemical company with good policies. Then an article came out in Fortune magazine at about that time on Monsanto, and I read that. But there was also an article that came out on Copper's company, and Copper's had made me an offer, and I didn't hear from Monsanto, so I accepted the Copper's offer to go to Pittsburgh as a cadet engineer. Then in came the offer from Monsanto. So I went to see the chairman of the department. His name was Jesse Mason. What should I do? He said, well, clearly you want to go to work for Monsanto. Why don't you write Copper's and ask if you can be relieved of the commitment? So I did that. They responded promptly. While it was a very unusual request, they would grant the request. Then I accepted the job with Monsanto. Of course, I never regretted accepting a job with Monsanto. And then the word from Monsanto came that I would be assigned to an ordnance plant in Texas, which was under construction, and until it was completed, I would work at the general headquarters in St. Louis. So I reported there on June the 1st of 1942, which means that in a few months, I will celebrate 50 years of continuous professional effort in chemical engineering. Mm. So that turned out to be a good thing, too, to get acquainted with the company at its headquarters location.
You had made that, I didn't mean to interrupt, but you had made that comment about your first exposure to professional ethics, and I wasn't...
Well, my concern was, should I just... accept the Monsanto job and you write to Copper's and say, sorry, I've changed my mind. Okay. I didn't feel that that was quite the ethical thing to do.
Okay.
I preferred to do what the chairman had suggested. I don't know that you would really call it a matter of ethics, but we do run into that sometimes on interviews where students will, I don't think they do it these days, but they have in the past, where they might visit two companies in California and bill each company for the full round-trip cost, that sort of thing. So that put me in St. Louis, another nice big city. And
good railroad town.
A good railroad town. One of the best after Chicago, I suppose. But Monsanto was, even there, was gearing up, and so they were on 5.5-day weeks. And then I was sent up to Chicago area for training at Kankakee Ordnance Works. And I'd like to mention here that this was a plant that was operated by the DuPont Company, designed by DuPont Company for the government. And I think that what DuPont did in 41 and 42 to allow us to move quickly into explosives is really something to write about. Certainly their plants worked, the designs were set, they were freely given to the government, and tremendous amounts of lead azide, TNT, and other materials were produced quickly. The plant that I went to in October of that year was known as a 5-year plant. This was Longhorn Ordnance Works at near Marshall, Texas. I'll talk about that in a minute. But it was constructed quickly in less than a year. 5-year plant means that the buildings were all frame, the pipe supports were wooden, but all of the processing equipment and the controls were first class. The Kankakee Ordnance Works was a 25-year plant, so it was brick and stone and so forth, steel. But the training at Kankakee was interesting also because there were trainees there from a number of different ordnance plants, so you could get the perspective that that explosives were being produced in many locations in the country.
What specifically were you being trained in?
Well, I was trained as a control chemist initially, and was given the title of shift supervisor chemist. I had only myself to supervise, and I was on shift. It was a control laboratory. It was out in the TNT area, and I analyzed the samples of the nitrated toluenes as well as the toluene. And incidentally, it was at that time in 1942 that we first started using toluene from petroleum. It was shipped out of Baytown, Texas. Before that, it was all coke oven toluene. We could see the difference in the analysis. The petroleum, which came from a reforming type operation, was really good quality, close boiling range material. But that did change the complexion. In fact, I was while in training at Kankakee that this news came out that the first tank car of petroleum toluene had come in. I later talked with some of the people with Humble Oil who were involved in producing that first tank car. At least that was the first tank car for the Kankakee Ordnance Works. And then, of course, the shift was made heavily because I don't think there was nearly enough coke oven capacity to supply the war effort. Not only for toluene, but for benzene. So that was an interesting shift that we noticed. At the Longhorn Ordnance Works, go ahead.
Yes, you went up to Kankakee in October of 42, and when did you get back to Texas then?
No, the Kankakee, I went up to Kankakee in mid-July of 42.
Oh, okay.
I was really assigned to St. Louis, but on temporary.
I see.
And then I got back from there the 1st of September and moved on down to Texas in the middle of October. In between, I worked in the research lab for a chemist named Ferd Zienti, who was a good teacher. I learned a lot in 6 weeks with him. But East Texas was quite different from St. Louis. Now, the plant was out at the town of Karnak. K-A-R-N-A-C-K.
It's still a very small dot on the map.
Yes, but it has become famous because that's where Lady Bird Johnson was born and grew up. And I remember that we went in on the train to Marshall, and they put us in a truck to take us out to the plant. And we drove by this large brick home of T.J. Taylor. He was the boss man of Karnak. The reservation there was very large. It was on Caddo Lake. That was the source of the water. It really it was remote, which you needed for a TNT plant. And I would say, by today's standards, it was a good plant location on a railroad. But I would guess also that Lyndon Johnson, by this time married to Lady Bird Johnson, Taylor, had some influence in the location of that plant. In fact, T.J. Taylor sold a lot of that property to the government. But it was a good site and a good plant. And we then went on a 51-hour a week work schedule. It should be 48, but then they added travel time to and from the gate because you had to use buses to. The nitrating area was some distance from the front gate, just to be safe. So that was a 51-hour week. So that was a busy time.
What were housing accommodations like?
The group that we moved as a group, there were about 10 of us, all single. And we just got rooms and homes around Marshall. But there was housing for married workers. In fact, some relatively new housing was put up. Some housing at the plant, right on the premises. And other housing in Marshall, which was where most people lived. So that was a good opportunity because we just went into startup after I got there, and so I was able to learn about the startup of the plants, of a plant of that type, because the operating headquarters for the nitrating area was part of the building where we had the control lab. And one night we had an explosion and fire in the trinitration plant. But I moved out of the lab in another 3 or 4 months and into the engineering department. because we were beginning to design a so-called direct nitration process that had some of the elements of a continuous process. See, the TNT process was batch, and a three-step batch process. You made mononitrotoluene, and then you moved that to another building, separated for the dinitration step. Then finally, for the trinitration step, you used oleum along with concentrated nitric acid for that nitration step. So we had oleum to deal with, and analyses of that. We concentrated sulfuric acid on site, but we shipped in the oleum. That, as you may have experienced, is an interesting material to work with.
Well, that was what I was going to ask, is what quantities are we talking about in a given batch? How large was the
problem? Oh, these batch reactors were about 6,000 to 8,000 gallons. They were big. Mm. So you took the recipe and you made a batch, and then you cooked it until the toluene was converted to nitrotoluene. They were agitated vessels. They were elevated in structure, and they had safety chutes, so if any operator was up on the second deck, and the problem was with runaway reaction. He would move to the side of a platform where there was a big chain pull, and as he hit the chute, he pulled this chain, and that dumped the contents into a big water vessel to kill the reaction. That's the way they controlled it. So, ultimately, as one assignment I had there, I put together a number of flow diagrams of the nitration process as well as the ammonia oxidation. We made our nitric acid, and we concentrated sulfuric, dilute sulfuric. We concentrated nitric too, but the net input of sulfuric was in the form of oleum, which came over from Shreveport, not too far. But we shipped in ammonia, which also emphasized the need for ammonia in the early days of the war, for the war effort. And that was the source of the nitrogen for a lot of TNT. Mm-hmm. So the operation would be considered crude by today's standards, and of course later, after the war, the TNT process went continuous. But there was a lot of chemical engineering to learn in the process. So in my role in the engineering department, I was involved in piping changes and putting in new foundations, a lot of civil engineering work, surveying, good experience items.
Did you have that civil engineering type of background at Georgia Tech? Did you get any exposure?
I did not take a surveying course there. If I had started there as a freshman, I would have. At that time, they introduced most engineers to survey or shop. But I worked with a more experienced engineer who he ran the transit most of the time, and I went out and made the measurements and held the pole. So that I had, although I had gotten some surveying experience in high school, so I had some background in it to begin with. So I got into engineering, and then I was shifted down to the nitric acid concentration unit, where I could had my first introduction to bubble cap tray columns, because the nitric acid was concentrated using azeotropic distillation, and sulfuric acid was added as an azeotropic agent. So you could take dilute nitric, water and nitric acid, and you added sulfuric to it to pull the water out of the nitric, and the nitric went overhead as a very concentrated material. I guess I get kind of scared now about working in such close contact with these high concentration acids. But, we didn't have to wear hard hats. The people in the acid area at Longhorn had to wear felt hats. Had to wear some kind of a head covering, just for acid spills, but not for wrenches falling on the head. So